from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll take a look at the newly remodeled Indiana History Center.
I get to chat with Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch about turning 40.
I'll find out what makes Peter Pan fly at Footlight Musicals. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indiana Historical Society is all abuzz about its newly remodeled facility, the Indiana History Center, and its upcoming programming. Amy Lamb and Aaron Kelly brushed construction dust off their clothes and dropped in to talk with Sharon Gamble about what's up in the IHS world.
So it's probably felt like years and years to you, but it's time to reopen a lot of things at the Indiana History Center. Right. Let's talk about that.
It is. Well, we opened the theater at the start of the fall, and we're very happy to have a lot of our partners coming back in Storytelling Arts of Indiana, the International Violin Competition. We just had some Heartland Film events. And now, in addition to the history, at the History Center, in addition to the theater, we also are reopening the Baselli History Market, which just recently opened, as well as the Stardust Terrace Cafe, so people can start using us on a semi-daily basis now if they want to come in, grab a bite to eat, if they want to do some holiday shopping, and then, of course, catching a lot of those wonderful events that we're hosting in the fall. People are going to be greeted by a new lobby area. People will remember that theater mezzanine area,
right,
and you could look down into the cafe. We've actually filled in that floor now, so we've pulled the Welcome Center out. The History Market is in a new location, easy to access right across from the theater. And then downstairs, we actually have kind of a Victorian streetscape going with
really?
That Stardust Terrace Cafe theme. Hoagland To Go, which operates the cafe, has expanded its menu because we added, with our new construction, a ventless fryer and grill. So you can actually get grilled cheese sandwiches and their signature burger on focaccia bread and with applewood smoked bacon and all sorts of other wonderful things.
Not that Amy has a favorite or anything.
Actually, I haven't had that yet, but I'm looking forward to trying it. But it's really going to be wonderful. People can see some of that construction that we're doing. And then, of course, in March of 2010, we'll open the Indiana Experience with a lot of those programmatic elements that people saw as prototype in 2008.
Aaron, what have been the biggest challenges of having only some things accessible over the last 10? Remind me how long it's been.
It's been since we closed down to the public in March of 2009,
yeah.
Reopened just the theater wing, in early November. It's been challenging for me. I'm the public programs coordinator, so I really haven't had a place to do programs, but we've still been incredibly busy. The things that we're going to be offering the public in the spring of 2010, I'm tooting my own horn here. They're amazing. The Historical Society, we are doing things that are incredibly incredibly innovative and cutting edge for historical organizations and museums. So we've been very, very busy just planning for the future.
What's your favorite project?
Well, my favorite project is the History Lab. The History Lab is an area that is adjacent to our Conservation Lab, and it is a place where people can learn about how to preserve their family treasures. It's really an effort on the part of the Historical Society to take some of that insider knowledge that we have and sharing it with the public. So you will learn the best tenets of conservation, how to store your materials, how to use, we even do a hands-on paper mending demonstration using Japanese wheat paste and tissue paper, teaching you how to restore documents so you're not using tape, which is not a good thing. It becomes brittle and nasty over time. So we're trying to really take our skills and expertise and share those things with the public.
Very, very cool. Book and Authors Fair is coming up very soon. What are some of the highlights of that?
Well, we have 85 authors and co-authors coming in this year. And the nice thing about our holiday author fair, which is presented by Verizon, is that we keep it fresh. You know, the people who are coming to our author fair, either they've lived in Indiana, they've written about Indiana, there's some sort of Hoosier connection there. But usually those titles have been published within the last 18 months. So you're not going to see the same authors. Of course, you're going to have favorites like James Alexander Thom and Philip Gully, Ray Boomhauer, who works on our staff but also writes quite a few books in his spare time. You know, you're always going to get that physical interaction. You know, get to shake their hand, ask them about their books, and then, of course, get them personalized and signed. It's a wonderful holiday shopping opportunity. We also have a special area for kids, kids authors, as well as, you know, activities, hands-on crafts, and that sort of thing. One new thing that we have this year, we partnered with Storytelling Arts of Indiana to bring a youth writing contest, people writing about their favorite Indiana memories. So we actually have three different age groups, anything from age 5 all the way up through 18, and those winners are going to get to read their stories as part of our presentations during the day. So we're really looking forward to some of the next generation of Indiana authors coming in and sharing their stories, as well as getting to see some of the authors present in detail how they come up with the books that they write or specifics on that subject matter.
You know, that's a really good point, too, that even though history is the middle name of both the physical facility and the parent organization, history is made today as well. And a 5-year-old is not going to think, I'm making history by writing about my memories. He or she is.
Well, sure. And there are so many things in our collection. We were just talking the other day about a James Whitcomb Riley postcard collection that we have. As many people might know, he didn't always have the best health, and he had actually suffered a stroke in the fall. His brother had passed away, and so newspapers across the country picked up this little story on the wire saying, why don't you send a Christmas greeting or a note to James Whitcomb Riley? And hundreds of postcards have poured in, and we have those in our collection. So, you know, you see the postcards themselves, which are historical documents, you know, early 20th century, but then you flip it over, and there are these little handwritten notes from, you know, children as well as adults wishing him well, giving him condolences for his brother's passing, and hoping that he feels better soon. So, you know, all those little things that you see today are going to end up being wonderful archival material and memories for future generations.
About what percent of the Indiana Historical Society's holdings, about what percent is on display at any given point?
A very small percentage. Mm-hmm. That's true for any museum,
sure.
Particularly a historical society. We're largely, our collection materials are flat and image-based, and they're used for a lot of research purposes. And that's presented us with some challenges on how to tell the stories of these materials, because they're not really three-dimensional objects. But those challenges have led to some fun things around the Historical Society that we've been able to do. That's why we publish so many books, and we've collaborated on films. And our new the Indiana Experience is all about stepping back into history, and we're trying to take these materials and make them come alive in new ways through technology and through first-person interpretation. So we're really trying to be as creative as possible with our materials, because honestly, we can't display all of them.
Sure.
And while they're not displayed per se, most of them are accessible through the William H. Henry Smith Memorial Library. So if you have an interest in Abraham Lincoln, you can come into our library. Now, we won't be able to pull out things like the Alexander Gardner negative, which are too fragile to be handled, but you might be able to pull a diary from a person at that time who got to see Lincoln speak on his way to his inauguration. I've actually held one of those types of things in my hand and read them. And it's really engaging. You get to physically touch history and do research and whatever else you need to do. But the vast majority of things in our collection, the 1.6 million photographs, those postcard collections, manuscripts, diaries, maps, you can actually come into the reading room and access those with the help of our reference services desk.
And I think it's important to note, you don't have to be a professional historian.
No.
You can be just John Q. Public.
You could be a fourth grader working on an Indiana history report. You could be doing family history research. You could be trying to restore a home, and you want to see what the neighborhood looked like or what homes of that period looked like. There are all sorts of reasons to access it, and we just hope that people realize that they can take advantage of that. Our hours at the library are Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and we do have expert reference staff on hand to help you find what you're looking for if you didn't find it in our online catalog on our website.
What are some of the most popular items that people want to know about or see when they come in?
A lot of family history materials. We do have a lot of family historians, genealogists who come to the Historical Society, so they're often looking for county histories or maybe some census data or, you know, even old photographs like neighborhoods and communities, as Amy mentioned, to help build a better environment. They want to understand the environment that their ancestors lived in. Mm-hmm. So certainly a lot of family historians.
Mm-hmm. And Civil War history is one of the strengths of our collection. So you find a lot of people coming in. Obviously, our Abraham Lincoln collections are of great interest to people throughout the world, not just the United States. And then, I mean, we do have 1.6 million photographs. So somebody might just be looking for something to decorate their home with. We have a lot of people who order photographic reprints of things in our collection to do decoration and that sort of thing. O'Charlie's, if you ever go into a local O'Charlie's, they actually have images from our collection. Judge's Barbecue over on the west side, near west side. So, you know, there are all sorts of ways to use our collection, and then there are all sorts of reasons to search for it as well. And we do have a listing of some of the strengths of our collection on the website if people are interested in finding out what kinds of things we hold.
And some of the photos are reproduced online.
Yes, we have about 37,000 images right now in our digital collection, and people can access that through our website. But just because you don't see something there doesn't mean that we don't have exactly what you're looking for. So we always encourage people to not only look at the online catalog and the online image catalog, but also contact us through email or through phone to ask questions, and we can answer those for you.
Sure. One of the things I'm excited about, because I got to, Amy invited me to come to see a little sneak preview before you guys closed the facility for the renovation. The You Are There, the World War II era grocery store. Mm-hmm. That was so cool. And you walk through this. I don't know how it was created. It's a fog screen.
It's
a fog screen. Yeah, mm-hmm. It feels like you're going into the Wayback Machine, and you step in and you interact with these people who are clearly the enactors are clearly completely steeped in who their character was, mm-hmm. and the language of the era and the customs of the era and what you'd be talking with your grocer mm-hmm. about in the era.
Definitely. Dan Shockley, our coordinator of interpretation, does a wonderful job of getting our interpreters prepared for that. And they have such a wonderful interest in delving in as deep as they can. In addition to the 1945 Hoosier Homefront exhibit, we're also going to have a 1924 Tool Guys and Tin Lizzies, you look at the photo, which was from Hartford City. You think you know what you see. You think you see an auto mm-hmm. body shop, but you actually find out as you enter that there are lots of other things going on in that space as well. And then we also will have one with the Conrad Violin Shop from Indianapolis, and that was the 1914 time period, and we'll have that on display for people as well. So walking in and being able to ask the interpreter anything you want, but they don't know about cell phones, they don't know about the internet, all those sorts of things that happened after the time the photograph was taken, they're clueless, but they can give you a lot of insight into their own time.
I imagine you kind of hiding in the wings and watching school kids as they try to come to grips with, what do you mean? You can't relate to texting.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's a healthy thing to force people to make that mental shift too, to mm-hmm. understand more about history, where we've been and where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of tradition, Las Posadas is coming up again on Sunday, December 13th.
Las Posadas is a Mexican holiday tradition that the Indiana Historical Society and Idlejorg Museum have been collaborating on for several years now. It's a beautiful celebration and tradition that commemorates Mary and Joseph's search for room at the inn. Traditionally, Las Posadas runs 9 nights. We're just doing 1 night of it. But basically, Posada means inn in Spanish, and people gather together, sing songs, and then in a procession, they our procession goes down the canal from the IHS to the Eideljorg at predetermined stops. People sort of gather and engage in this call and response in Spanish, and it involves Mary and Joseph, you know, begging for room at the inn and being turned away. And then at the final stop, which is at the Eideljorg, the doors are opened wide, everyone is welcome inside, and a celebration commences with mariachi music and the breaking of piñatas and ponche and pan dulce and just wonderful foods and just a very festive time. It's been a wonderful program to be involved with over the years, and our collaborations have grown. The Mexican consulate is involved. The Hispanic ministry from Christ Church Cathedral provides wonderful support. Before the procession begins, around 5 o'clock at the Historical Society, some of the youth congregants from Christ Church Cathedral perform an excerpt of a pastorella, which mm-hmm. is a shepherd's play. Mm-hmm. So it's just a wonderful way to start off the event and just a great holiday tradition for people to partake in.
And also a wonderful nod to the fact that our history is more multicultural than a lot of people who have never been to Indianapolis yeah. might know.
And that's one of the things I've loved about this program is that a wide variety of people come out for it. There are a lot of individuals from the Hispanic community, but many more people from long-established roots here in the city mm-hmm. Come to the Las Posadas program. So it's just a wonderful cultural mixing that takes place.
Amy Lamb and Aaron Kelly of the Indiana Historical Society with Sharon Gamble. Learn more about the Indiana History Center and the Indiana Historical Society's programming at IndianaHistory.org. Again, IndianaHistory.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. On November 10th, Sesame Street celebrated its 40th anniversary. Since Travis DiNicola also turned 40 this year, we thought that he would be the best person to chat with Sesame Street's Bob McGrath, along with Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch, about what it means to be 40.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm great. Hello. How are you?
Great.
I'm Bob, and there's Big Bird.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Big Bird. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you.
Great.
I think Oscar's hanging out also.
Oh, good.
I am. I guess I have to.
he's a little grouchy today.
Yeah. Like every day, I guess. I'm really glad to be able to talk to the three of you. This is a very exciting opportunity. I wanted to first start Big Bird by just saying I think you're a fine bird.
Wow. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And
We like him a lot.
Do you?
Yeah, I like Bob. I don't know why. He's a great guy.
Well, you guys have been friends for quite a long time.
Yeah.
40 years, a little over 40 years, actually. And, you know, I remember we did a lot of wonderful pieces together, but one of my favorites was one time I said to Oscar, why are you always so grouchy? And he said, well, if you looked at the world from my point of view, you'd be grouchy, too. And he actually managed to get me to step into the trash can, and I ended up stepping on his rotten egg collection and bumping into Fluffy the Elephant, and then came out in shatters about 5 minutes later.
You looked like you needed a good bath when you came out.
But that was a fun segment.
You know, that's one of the things I've really wanted to ask you, especially you, Oscar, is I've heard some amazing stories about what the inside of your trash can is like, that there's even a bowling alley in there. Is any of that true?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. You see, as you get in, it seems to get a little wider as you go down, and there's actually quite a lot of room.
Have you decorated?
Large enough for Fluffy the Elephant.
Well, yeah, it's got to be large enough.
It's a full-size elephant.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oscar, how have you decorated your trash can?
Well, I'm a recycler. So, I mean, if I don't find many hubcaps anymore. Everybody's got those big, silly wheels. But I used to get all these hubcaps. They come rolling off a car, it hits a bump, and I hang them on the walls instead of painting.
Nice, nice. Has your style changed over the years, or does it still pretty much look the same inside there?
My favorite one is a Oldsmobile hubcap, and it's, the only other really vintage one is a Hudson Terraplane hubcap. Those are pretty small.
Nice. Hey, Big Bird, let me just ask you, what's it like living on Sesame Street for you?
Well, it's very pleasant, except for Oscar.
I heard that.
I know, he likes it when I say that. You know, and I really have such a wonderful time because I have good neighbors like Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, I always have a lot of fun with Christmas time with Bob.
Christmas, aw.
Yes, his family comes over. We all have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christmas, I love Christmas. And I like other seasons, too. Summertime is great. And Gordon and Susan sometimes take me to the beach.
Bob, let me ask you the same question. What's it like been living on Sesame Street and especially seeing all the changes that have taken place over the years?
It's pretty astounding. None of us expected this to last 40 years. Even Joan Cooney said we'll try it for a couple of years and then move on and see what else we can do. But it's just been thrilling to think that this show has been on 40 years and we're in 120 countries and 20 foreign co-productions and wonderful places like South Africa and Bangladesh and India and so forth and Kosovo and the kind of things that it's doing all over the world. I mean, it truly is the longest street in the world and doing some magnificent things. But it hardly seems possible that 40 years has gone by. And we've had, you know, everyone from the Pete Seegers to the Beyoncés on the show over the years and all these great classical musicians, Itzhak Perlman, Yo-Yo Ma, Isaac Stern, and so forth. And to know that we've really made a difference in millions of children's lives is tremendously encouraging. And the camaraderie between not only all the Muppets, but certainly the live cast members is unbelievable. I don't think there's ever been a moment of conflict between any of the cast members. It really and truly is like a big family. And we don't get together all that much off camera, but whenever we do, we just have an absolutely marvelous time.
That's true for sure.
Well, I wanted to say, Bob, you mentioned, you know, how many children it's affected. Those children are, in many cases, now adults. I just turned 40 myself this summer and was watching Sesame Street as long as I can remember.
Really?
Yes.
I heard that President Obama is our first Sesame Street kid who is president.
He used to watch it.
He was a little older when it started, but he watched it with his little sister.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were thrilled to have Michelle on today's first show.
Yeah, I heard
and
about
of course,
that.
This year is one of the curriculum is the new nature curriculum. It's called My World is Green and Growing. And Michelle was on planting a little garden. And it's wonderful how these rather subtle messages can really take hold with young children. They really are very, very meaningful, and they tend to work over the years.
Hey, Oscar, how do you feel about this whole new green initiative? Do you take it personally?
I do, actually. I'm very green myself, you know.
I notice.
I find it's very easy to be green because it's moss, actually. And not only that, but I have a rather nice crop of mushrooms growing this year.
In your hair.
Yeah,
and Oscar's
there. Hey, Big Bird, I just wanted to tell you something that I always wanted to tell you when I was a kid, and that's that I always knew Snuffleupagus was real.
You believed.
I always believed.
Bob was my great friend, but he wouldn't believe me that he was
real. I wouldn't
real.
Believe.
It took a while.
Skeptic, Bob. Shame, Bob.
Sorry,
James.
Sorry, Bob.
Well, it certainly took a while, but it was well worth it.
I kind of always felt like when we did tons and tons of people of episodes and segments together as Oscar and Bob, and I always kind of felt like we were the children's television odd couple, you know, between those two.
That was true. Remember my electric spoon when you got to enjoy the cold gravy?
I was a sucker for every one of his cheap tricks, and one of them he said, Bob, I got this electric spoon. You don't even have to feed yourself. And so he had a bowl of chocolate pudding or something, and it was great. And it started very, and I just held the spoon, and I made pretty soon he turned up the speed, and of course, moments later, I was totally splattered in chocolate. So
he looked great with the chocolate pudding all over his face and all over his suit. Yes. It was a new suit, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
Yeah, it was. Not too bad.
But this year, you know, I think it's a wonderful new look in the show. We have computer-generated images, animation for the first time on Abby Cadabby and her Abby's Flying Fairy School. And it gives it kind of a new 3D look.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the whole focus, 2-year focus on the nature curriculum.
Yeah, we don't have to have those puppets on.
And kind of helping show kids, you know, respect and care for the environment and its inhabitants and a lot of wonderful celebrities, plus all of the wonderful things that we've been doing for 40 years with, you know, showing good friends on the street and so forth. So, but they've really kept the show looking up to speed because there's a lot of competition out there.
Well, it was certainly great having Michelle Obama on for the 40th anniversary. Can you give us a hint of who else might be visiting Sesame Street this year?
A couple of people. There's a ton of them. Everyone from Kobe Bryant, Hugh Jackson, Carmen Diaz, Lin-Manuel.
Adam Sandler, he's very funny.
Adam Sandler, right. Sarah Jessica Parker, Ricky Gervais.
He's
Meredith,
funny.
Meredith Vieira, yes, that's funny. There's probably 25 or 30 Cameron Diaz and Jimmy Fallon.
25 Cameron Diaz? I didn't know that she was so many.
That'll be an interesting show. Hey, I know that not everyone could join you today, but I just wanted to ask, you know, how are some of the other guys doing? How's Cookie Monster? How's he been up?
Well,
he's doing
very healthy now, doesn't he, Bob?
Yeah.
I've heard that.
He has a new song called Cookies Are a Sometimes Food.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he's still eating cookies. He didn't give them up.
And I noticed that most time is sometime for him. He makes a point to sit outdoors at Hooper's store and eat a really full, nice meal. Then he has his cookies.
I had about a 4 or 5-year-old come up and said to me one time, just in the last year, he said, "Bob, do you know that cookies are a sometimes food?" And I said, so the messages are getting through, even though we do them in a lot of wonderful and silly ways.
Yes, you do. And they're certainly very enjoyable to watch. What about that new kid on the block, Elmo? I guess he's not so new anymore.
Not so new now. He's always absolutely fantastic. That's Kevin Clash, and he's absolutely brilliant in every way you can imagine as a puppeteer, as a director. He can hold his own with any comedian. He can scat with any jazz singer. I mean, he is incredibly multi-talented. And, of course, Jim put him in charge of the Muppets way before he passed away because he recognized his brilliance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you all very much for just the joy and pleasure and education that you've provided for the past 40 years, and I know for many, many more. So.
Okay, I just want to say one thing. I love Indianapolis, and I worked with the symphony there. And John Nelson used to be your conductor there, the Indianapolis Symphony, and we were close friends. And now here's Big Bird.
Yes, well, it was awfully fun to talk to you. It was awfully fun. That's not right, is it?
For Big Bird, that's okay.
Travis, it was so nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
It really is, and was.
Well, Big Bird, Oscar, Bob, it was great chatting with you, too.
Thank you,
bye.
Travis.
Bye-bye.
Have a rotten day.
Travis DiNicola with Sesame Street's Bob McGrath, along with Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch. You can watch Sesame Street every weekday on WFYI TV 20 from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m.
Come in. Sharon, there's an escaped turkey running around here.
Look, the Thanksgiving turkey has come to join us today. That was very nice of him.
It is. You know, even turkeys love arts and cultural events.
So, Tom the turkey here is ready for our arts calendar recall.
What
do
we
do?
Yeah, I know what Tom's doing on Thursday.
Yeah,
but before then, there's plenty of good stuff to do.
Plenty of good stuff.
Plenty of good stuff.
I see. Yeah. As you're gathering around the Thanksgiving table, no matter what happens to be on it, whether it's tofurkey or our friend Tom over here, you might...
Or turducken.
Or turducken. I love capitalism. Anyway, you might talk with your family and friends about some things that you can do as we enter the winter holiday season, including this is something cool going on at the Morris Butler House. They have a series of events celebrating what they call Christmas Past, including holiday tours, teas, and a storytelling hour. The storytelling hour is coming up on December 9th at 6 o'clock, and it's family-friendly. You can also partake of Victorian High Holiday Teas on December 5th, 12th, 19th at 1 p.m., and you can enjoy Queen Victoria's favorite cake plus cider cookies and, of course, tea. All that's going on at the Morris Butler House through this holiday season.
You know, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but I think Indie Fringe has a great sense of humor. They're putting on a production of the Sam Shepard play, Curse of the Starving Class, going on this weekend as well as the weekend after Thanksgiving. And I love Sam Shepard anyway. I'm a great American playwright. Mm-hmm. And this play specifically deals with a very dysfunctional family, dealing with losing the farm, sort of an interesting time when families get together to eat a lot of food during the holidays. Mm-hmm. And then go see Curse the Starving Class.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could work. It is at the Indie Fringe building, which is just off of Mass Avenue on East St. Clair Street. And it is taking place this weekend as well as December 4th, 5th, and 6th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3 at Indie Fringe.
There you go. Very cool. If you're listening to us on Friday night, you still have time, or Saturday afternoon for that matter, you still have time to score a ticket for La Boheme, the beautiful, beautiful opera that even people who don't especially care for opera love. And the remaining performance is coming up on Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock at Clues Memorial Hall.
That'll be very exciting. Great way to spend Sunday afternoon.
Absolutely.
Hey, there's still time on Saturday to go to the Wet Your Pants Comedy Film Festival, which is actually a fundraiser.
You're making that up.
No,
show me that. Is
I'm
that
not.
Real?
It's even better, Sharon. It's a fundraiser for the National Kidney Foundation. This is taking place in Carmel, and anyways, if you go to wetyourpantsfilmfest.org, it's a whole bunch of comedy films that are being shown up at the Carmel Community Playhouse in Clay Terrace all day on Saturday.
I have a couple of things going on that kids will like, especially if they're past the bedridden stage. Let me just put that out there. Jolly Days opens with Santa's Big Arrival at the Children's Museum the day after Thanksgiving. At Santa's going to slide down the Yule slide at 9:50 a.m. You know, you got to hand it to the big guy. He really knows how to make an entrance. And kids of all ages, seriously, will enjoy the Jolly Days exhibit. This is a grand tradition at the Children's Museum. And there's an indoor ice skating area for kids to skate in their socks. It's not real ice. A large kitchen area to make holiday goodies, including traditional cookies, and a staff-facilitated snowball fight using cotton pom-poms at various times during the day.
Wow, cool.
During the run of Jolly Days. All that going on at the world's largest children's museum right here in our fair city at 30th and Meridian Street, Jolly Days.
And if while you're celebrating the holidays, you wish that your family was a little bit more like the Brady Bunch, then maybe you should go see Florence Henderson joining the Indianapolis Symphony for their Pop Series concert this weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights, Indiana's own Florence Henderson is going to be singing a whole bunch of Broadway songs and maybe even the Brady Bunch theme song as well.
At Madison, Indiana, there's a tour called Nights Before Christmas Candlelight Tour of Homes. This has been going on for years and years and years. This year, you can go see some of those spectacular mansions, including the Lanier Mansion, the Masonic Schofield House, the Sullivan House, and the Jefferson County Historical Society Museum. They'll be all decked out in their Christmas finery, and you can tour them on November 27th, 28th, 29th, or December 4th, 5th, and 6th in Madison, Indiana.
The last thing I have is a senior photography exhibit at the Heron School of Art that opens on Wednesday the 2nd at 5:30, and the title of the exhibit, Running with Cameras. So, we have lots... There's that turkey again. Well, Sharon, I wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. We certainly have lots to be thankful for.
We do indeed. We thank you for joining us this week for The Art of the Matter. And come back again. We'll have things to help you burn off those Thanksgiving calories on this calendar item we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Believe in fabulous musicals? Clap your hands. Sharon Gamble believes, so she invited Camilla Upchurch and Bob Harbin in to talk about Footlight Musical's production of Peter Pan. Camilla is the director, and Bob Harbin plays Smee.
Camilla, when did you first encounter Peter Pan, book or show?
Oh, it's been years ago, of course. Being older than dirt myself. I first saw it staged, I think, when I was literally 6 years old.
Aww.
And a local production. And, of course, like everyone, I was enthralled by the magic of it. And have seen it in many incarnations since then. When the idea of producing it came up at Footlight, who had done one production many, many years ago, had not done it in recent times. It seemed that there was a lot of interest in it, and we thought it was an opportunity to flex our muscles a bit as far as our technical prowess.
Absolutely.
Because there's so many special technical aspects of this show. So,
not the least of which is flying somebody.
That's it. We have, yes. And
safely.
Exactly. Safety being our watchword. Uh-huh. Yes, and we have... And we have a wonderful cast, and they've just been fearless. You know, of course, the flying is the hot item. Everyone
right.
wants to be
right.
in the harness at some point. But and we've got wonderful fly captains who, you know, are watching our backs at all times. And we do have it's a big undertaking for a small community theater like ours. And we do have four people in the air at once, which is a big deal. And so far, it's been a great deal of fun.
Now, for our listeners who don't want to know how it works, tune away for a minute, because I want you to describe how that works. What does the harness look like? How is it hoisted in the air? How does flying work?
It looks, the harness to me, and I've actually been in it, the director gets to go up. By golly, it's one of the perks. Of course, it is also their opportunity to get you, you know, but I trusted my people. And it looks a lot to me like if you strap into a parachute, the same kind of, uh-huh. of operation. And then we work this particular harness apparatus is a pendulum system. There are different systems, some attach at the hip, others attach at the back, in the center of the back, and that's what this one is. This is the system that Mary Martin flew on.
Wow.
When she originally did it back in the 50s. And it can be a difficult system to use as far as gaining control. Your backside just seems naturally to want to turn to the audience.
to the audience.
So there's a lot of
never
working.
Never good in theater.
Yes. There's a lot of working with that goes on. But cable hooks to the back, and then there are at least two men on the pulley system, one that takes you up and down, and one that takes you back and forth, and they work in tandem, you know, to make the magic happen.
Sure.
And actually, I think it's the same system that that Kathy Rigby uses now in her show that still tours, and I believe is in Branson now. So yeah,
but there has to be some pretty quick getting in and out of that too.
We have all kinds of cubbies for people to hide in, you know, as we get in and out of the apparatus, because of course there's the singing and dancing that goes on in between the flying bits,
right.
And we have to be out of the cable. to, you know, be off the cable in order to do the other bit. So yes, it's a technical challenge, as I say, but it's been a lot of fun as well.
and Bob, Smee really shouldn't fly, but have you taken a turn in the harness?
Can't talk him into
it. Once they decided that it would take a team of Clydesdales to get me up in the air, it was decided that it was best for Smee to stay earthbound.
Oh, Lord. No. Keep that pirate sword on the ground. Do you remember your first exposure to Peter Pan?
You know, I do. It was the Mary Martin Cyril Richard production, a television production back in the 1950s.
Wow.
Cyril Richard just was as Captain Hook, was frightening and dashing and just so dramatically and appropriately over the top in the role that it just something that stays with you. And I think that, you know, since that time, there have been lots of different versions. I mean, even in films, you know, with Neverland and the British production of Peter Pan that have been, you know, very interesting and fun. I think it's a wonderful story that we all can relate to, that, you know, where is that magical place that we can go to when we think, you know, we're sad or being oppressed? You know, where is that where's our own personal Neverland that we can escape to and have adventures that are, you know, that are risky but yet, you know, safe and
there's always a mom there.
Absolutely.
A loving, warm mom. Yes. Who will see to it that we're tucked in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So do you think that's part of how do you make, and this is for both of you, how do you make this production and or your character appeal both to the kids, but then the kid in all of the grown-ups will be in the audience?
Well, I've always felt in doing so-called children's theater that if your adult audience member is bored, then your child is going to be bored. Mm-hmm. So we do focus on making sure that we keep our adults entertained, because I do think then the children will be entertained as well. I think these days, as Peter says in the show, children know such a lot these days, you know.
Which is interesting because that's from 1904,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, 1904 when it was first produced, yes. Children know such a lot these days. Soon they don't believe in fairies, you know, that kind of thing. And so I think in our time, children know such a lot and see such a lot and have access to so much that say Bob and I didn't, you know, as young people. It's a you approach it slightly differently, but I still think that the magic of the piece translates to everyone and transcends to everyone. As Bob said, everyone seeks Neverland in some way, you know, at some point. And so the challenge is then for us to give them Neverland,
right,
you know.
Right.
And we have a tremendous cast and staff at work on the show, and we've received a lot of support. Don't you think, Bob?
Mm. I think that's within that question is the magic of theater itself. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason that theater will never go away, despite the video games, despite the movies and the special
Netflix
effects and all that,
yeah,
sort of thing, that's still a reaction that you're having to something that is two dimensional, that is a flat screen, and what's fabulous is being able to take characters that are bigger than life and to stretch them and engage, and Tammy, let's do that show.
Thank you.
Cammy has
thank you,
been
John,
so wise in having us partake with the audience and, you know, use the aisles and use the edge of the stage and talk to the children and talk to the adults and involve them in the production. I think that too is something that just pulls you into the action, and there's no way to be bored in that sort of situation.
It's talk to me about your set. We've talked a little bit about the flying, but how are we going to, how realistic will these places be? Are we going to be aboard the pirate ship? Will we get to be in the forest?
We are. We will be in the forest. We will be in the underground home. We will be in the nursery, of course, where the show begins. We will be in the Mermaid's Lagoon. We will be in all of the magical places with all the magical creatures. Yes, we've a marvelous technical director, Brenda Upchurch, who has...
I'm guessing a relation?
Yes, my sister-in-law.
You know, we were so lucky. There was a period of time at Ball State when we all went to school together.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, we've done productions together before. We've designed sets before. And there's a handful of others here in the city that at the same time. And what a joy to come back together. And Brenda is a magician.
She is. Amazing.
She's a nonstop working magician when it comes to technical theater. The sets are glorious and beautiful on a budget that, you know, we could go to lunch on. Across the street at McDonald's.
Yeah, said the truth.
So she's just amazing, and it looks beautiful. It's a joy to work on.
Speaking of going back to roots, Bob, I'm going to put you on the spot because you have worn the director's and producer's hat a lot more than the actor's hat in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a hard transition to make? To not be to not be responsible for quite as much, but to be responsible more deeply for your character?
I think the first step is to trust the people you're working with, and which I do. So I think when you have that, it's very helpful. It gives you the time and the space to create a character. There are times, when I think to myself, well, now, why aren't you doing it that way? But you know what? That's not my...
Careful.
But the show is not about my vision. And
right.
I think that's what's terrific about different jobs is to try to, in your own way, make someone else's vision come true. And that's what's joyous about it. And I learn. You know, the next time that I have an opportunity, to direct or produce something... I will be able to take experiences from this production and learn from it and hopefully, do, a better job from what I've learned from Cammie and the other people she has on the show working with her. No, it's not difficult when the people that are directing you know what they're doing.
Hmm. How did you come up with your vision or your philosophy of this production, because it is such a beloved story. Virtually everybody in our listening audience probably has some experience. If they've never seen the stage show or a film version of it, they've probably read the story, or maybe they've seen a biopic about the author. Do you something in particular, something kind of ritualistic to get people to leave their memories of other Peter Pans behind, or do you draw in some of your cast and crew and designers' sensibilities about other Peter Pans? How do you go about that?
Absolutely. I try to surround myself with the very best people that I can find, and I use those people, the ideas that they have, the research that they've done, and just the sensibility that they bring to it. In my own preparation for the show, there are at least 7 different so-called acting versions of the play.
Hmm.
And so in deciding which version to use and how we were going to adapt that version for our particular facility and the people we had and the money we have and the time we have.
Or lack of money. or lack of time.
Yes. I took all those things in consideration. I've worked at Footlight many years,
sure.
So I know what's there. And then I went back to the play, to the original play. And it is, James Barry was a poet. The man was a poet. You read it, and it is like reading any fine British poet when you read the descriptions and the way he talks about the characters and what comes out of each character's mouth is so it's so true, and it has sort of a gentle satiric turn to it in mm-hmm. many ways. You know, it was a little bit of a satire on the society of the times. But it has such beauty to it, and I think that is why it is a classic, why it has lasted so long, why it was produced first in 1904 and was produced every year after that until 1940.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's stunning.
Yeah. And
something about those Lost Boys and the magic translates into different eras of history.
Exactly. So we've added a few modern touches to it.
Do you want to tell us about them, or do you want them to be surprises?
Well, I think I'll just let people come and be surprised by it. But we have kept true to the spirit of what J.M. Barrie was trying to put across at the time. There are certain things that that will not play, certain references that will not play in modern times because they're incorrect for mm-hmm. our society.
Sure.
So we've had to make a few changes there, but the vast majority of the play remains intact and is just wonderful. It's lovely, it's magical, and that's what we hope to present, the magic of it.
Bob, your favorite pirate line?
My favorite pirate.
Careful.
Line.
Perhaps I should specify.
Would
from
that be that's in the script?
The script.
One that we
no,
come
no,
up
from
with?
The script.
Oh, no.
Does this run in prime time?
It does. There may be families with children listening. So.
You know, I think what's fun is with Smee's character is that he's kind of open to definition. We have a wonderful young man, Matt Patterson, who is playing Captain Hook, who's new to our area, and he has an amazing voice and can dance and is easy on the eyes, and I think he'll be, you know, very attractive and appealing to our young audiences, and he's so wonderful to play with that. My favorite line is one when he's talking about the clock in the crocodile, and Smee just for some reason is like, he comes up and says, you know, someday that clock's going to run down and that crocodile's going to get you, you know. and I think that's for me the most fun is there's the traditional relationship, they're friends, they're buddies, you know, they're thieves in arms, but I think there's, you know, Smee is always allowed to poke at him.
Yeah.
And is the only one who kind of can do that and live. anyone else who would do that, you know, would be walking the plank.
Sharon Gamble with director Camilla Upchurch and Smee the Pirate, also known as Bob Harbin. You can see Footlight Musical's production of Peter Pan this weekend through December 6th. More information is available at footlight.org. That's spelled footlite.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when the group Time for Three takes some time to chat with me.
I get a preview of the IRT's production of A Christmas Carol.
And I'll find out what's going on this month at Christopher West Presents. And, of course, we'll have our calendar of events we call What Do We Do?
So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.